Welcome to the Pen to Profit Podcast. We cover everything from writing captivating prose to grammar to marketing tips, tricks, and insider advice to turn your passion for writing into cold, hard cash. Get ready to skyrocket your book sales and your audience with our guidance. Buckle up, because you're going on a rollicking ride through the realm of writing riches, because the Pen to Profit Podcast starts now.
All right, and we are live. Welcome back once again to another rip-roaring episode of the Pen to Profit Podcast. My name is Ray Evans, your friendly neighborhood proofreader. I can edit that out later. Proofreader, copy editor, and writing consultant. Today, I am joined by another very special guest. Josie Smith is an indie author and book coach for Black and Brown working moms who want to finish the novel of their dreams. She achieved her childhood dream of finishing a novel and publishing it in 2021. And now she supports other writers with the same dream. As a new mom with a busy job, she understands the challenges of managing it all. And she also believes strongly that writing and creativity can help women feel like themselves again after the chaos of motherhood. She lives in the San Francisco Bay Area with her husband, young son, anxious dog, and semi-feral cat. Okay, Josie, so did you want to say hi to the audience? And could you also tell us two things. What is your favorite book and why? And why is your cat semi-feral?
Thank you so much, Ray. Super excited to be here. Semi-feral cat. I mean, we adopted her from the streets of San Francisco in the first, month of owning her. She would climb into our garbage can to steal food, to eat food out of the garbage can. We had to put bricks in the bottom of the garbage can so that she wouldn't be able to knock it over. It's the whole thing. So yeah, it's been 4 or 5 years, and she's still, I would say, semi-feral, less feral than she was originally. Semi-feral now.
Has those stray cat instincts, apparently.
Yes, yes. No, for sure. It's my husband and I were what did we do? But we love her. It's she brings the family together. Favorite book is the hardest question to ask a reader and a writer. Oh my goodness.
But you have to answer though.
But I have to answer. We're dying to know. Yeah. 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 I have been recently getting into more Black fantasy novels, okay. By Black authors about Black characters. I'm reading one right now. I'll pull it up. It's set in New Orleans, and it's got magic, as if New Orleans just has magic in the town. It's called Blood Debts by Terry Benton Wash or something, Ward maybe. And it's about brother and sister with magic, and in New Orleans. I'm actually going to New Orleans in a few weeks. I'm excited to go back to the city and think about where's the magic in here. And so it's that's a fun one, and I've just been trying to expand. I've been getting more into fantasy and just trying to expand the types of fantasy that that I'm reading these days. And a lot of I'm noticing with these Black authors, there's a lot of mythology and history sort of pulled in from different parts of the world, things that you don't normally read about when you read fantasy. So that's been, I couldn't tell you where exactly it's coming from, but that's the thing that the authors will talk about, how they pulled in a lot of different sources, so that it's not just our sort of Western based sense of magic. It's, kind of pulling in different, different inspirations. So that's been cool to kind of see how that plays out on the page.
Awesome. I actually never heard of that. So I'm going to make a note of that and put that on my reading list, Blood Debts.
Yeah.
All right. So let's get right into it. So I understand that you're an author yourself, and it looks like I always do extensive research on everyone before they come on the show. So it looks like you are the author of a cozy mystery series called the Hemlock Inn Mysteries. So for anyone who doesn't know, can you tell us what defines the genre of cozy mystery, and can you give us a general synopsis of what the Hemlock Inn series is about?
Yeah, definitely. And for anyone looking up this series, if you know that you like cozy mysteries, I write under a pen name, so it's Josephine Smith is where you'll find those books. And a cozy mystery is, I think of it as a mystery A mystery that makes you feel cozy inside. It's typically set in a small town. There's usually not a ton of like blood and gore on the page, although like there's levels to that of like how gory it actually is. It's usually not too much. And often there is a mystery at the center of the novel, but it's also really about the characters and sort of the world that they are all living in. It's that small town that you'd want to go and visit and, you know, have a cup of tea at the, you know, local diner and just sort of sit surrounded by, you know, characters that make you laugh, make you cry, make you just, you know, feel really good. Plus, there is this puzzle that, you know, we're trying to solve underneath all of that. The Hemlock Inn mysteries are about a woman. Her name is Simone. She's a former bartender. She gets fired on the first page for punching a customer who's been acting inappropriately with his girlfriend. She gets very angry about how he was treating his girlfriend, but she gets fired as a result and is going to get evicted from her apartment, trying to figure out what to do. She ends up inheriting an inn left to her from an aunt and goes up to the forest of Washington State to try to figure out what she wants to do with this inn, if she wants to keep it, if she wants to sell it. And she stumbles onto a dead body and has to figure out what to do about this dead body. And so the whole series is about her learning to be confident in herself, learning to, you know, build a new life in this town, get to know all of these characters. There's an adorable beagle. Two senior citizens who like to take risks and go on adventures and solve murders with her. And it's just a fun, you know, I had a lot of fun writing them, and readers tell me that they're a lot of fun to read and just kind of feel like you're in this world of the Hemlock Inn.
Awesome. So would it be fair to say that a cozy mystery is sort of like Scooby-Doo almost, minus the talking dog?
I think so. There are some talking dogs or like in other cozy mysteries, like characters that are like dog animals that are, you know, sort of more like human-like than
anthropomorphic.
Yes, right. Exactly. Yeah. There is some of that in some cozy mysteries. Scooby-Doo. That's so funny. I don't think I've ever heard anyone make that comparison, but like, honestly, kind of. Yeah. Just going on like adventures with your friends and yeah, maybe in a mystery machine. I don't know. Yeah, that's a good comparison.
Yeah, it's kind of the same thing in a sense, you know. Like you said, there's no dead bodies and, you know, they're trying to solve a mystery. But frankly, if I always thought that if I was one of the criminals in a Scooby-Doo, instead of making up like this whole backstory and a monster costume, just get a gun and shoot them. And and then the problem solved in like 5 minutes. Not much of a show, but I think that's more practical. But I digress. We're not going to talk about hypothetical crimes that I may or may not have committed. So that's because I don't know who's watching right now or listening. So, yeah. So I understand you published your first book in 2021, and it looks like, according to your Amazon, I think that would have been Auctions and Alibis. Was that the first one? Yeah, in April of 2021. So I was kind of curious, could you share with us what initially inspired you to write that novel?
Yeah. So I started writing Auctions and Alibis in 2020. I've always been a writer. I've always been a reader. And as a result of being a reader, I've always wanted to write as well. I've always like tried my hand at writing and did it, you know, off and on since I was a kid, kind of throughout college, but could never really like stick with anything long enough, could never really finish anything. It was just like this thing I sort of did on the side. And then in 2020, you know, when the world was much the way that it was in 2020, I needed something to bring me some joy, something that I could do, you know, separate from my work and separate from just the chaos of the world. And so I just decided to start this new story. I have always loved mystery, so I knew it was going to be a mystery. And honestly, I don't know like exactly where like Simone came from, exactly where this inn came from. It all just kind of developed on the page as I was writing in 2020. I am from Washington State originally, so I wanted it to be set there. I had a dog named Lola when I was growing up, and that's the dog's name in the book. So a lot of things are, you know, kind of inspired by my life, but I've never like experienced a murder or had to solve a mystery like that. And I think it just all kind of it was just like, what do I love about mystery novels? What do I want to put into my book? How do I want to make things difficult for this character and then help her, you know, get to a better place in what she's doing? And it all just kind of, it definitely changed a lot and shifted a lot over that course of that year. But then got to a place where I, you know, felt really good about the novel that I'd written and decided to put it out into the world.
Awesome. So I was curious, how old is your son?
He is 8 months.
Oh, he's really young.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So I think I was able to like successfully write that book in a year because we didn't have any kids at that time. So it was just me and my husband in our house with the cat and the dog. But like, you know, they didn't need too much from us.
Your cat's rummaging through your garbage cans.
No, for real. Just, anything. Yeah. Oh my God. She's just a menace sometimes. I think that helped, like the fact that it was just like, you know, him and I in the house, and I didn't have, you know, little kids running around. I think a lot of people, you know, understandably had a lot of trouble during 2020 and 2021 with like their kids being home, all of that. And so I feel very lucky that I like, you know, kind of got back into my writing at that point and was able to have this achievement. Because now that I know that I can do it, that I can finish a book and put it out to the world, I feel much more motivated to make that happen. And so my son was born last year, and it has been a very interesting kind of transition where I'm now having to figure out, like, okay, I now have this baby, I have a full-time job, I still have a husband, like, how do I fit writing into all of this? How do I, you know, still... you know, give myself that like boost of creativity and joy that I get from writing while also spending time with my son. And so it's definitely still a work in progress. I am still writing now, still working on things. You know, my pace has definitely slowed down quite a bit with having a son, but I'm really pleased that I've been able to find a way to still keep up with that work, even given this new, you know, kind of major development in my life. And that's one of the reasons why I want to, you know, work with other moms, because I think a lot of times when people become moms, when women become moms, there can be this sense of, okay, now I am a mom. You know, I'm no longer the person that I was before. Right. I'm a mom.
And, like an identity shift, kind of.
Right. Yes, exactly. Yes. An identity shift. And it's like how, yeah, people can just feel sort of lost in that shift. They can, you know, years can pass by and they haven't really done anything for themselves. I felt that really early on with my son, where, you know, the first couple of months, everything's crazy really early on with a baby. but I would find myself, you know, taking care of him when he was awake, and then I would put him down to take a nap. And I would just sort of feel like I was adrift in our house because I didn't quite know what to do with myself in that free time. But when I was with him and he was awake, I had like one job. I would feed him, keep him alive, change his diaper, and then put him down to sleep. And then I was like, okay, well, what do I do with myself? And I actually, that was when I kind of returned back to my writing, because I'd kind of paused it when I was pregnant because I was just pregnancy fog, you know, kind of hard to like really focus creatively. But I just came back to my writing and came back to like, oh, hey, this is something that I am passionate about. And it feels like me. It's separate from me as a mom. It's separate from me as a wife. It's the thing that is all mine. And so I really want to get back into this. And so that's why I'm really like motivated to help other women who feel a similar kind of sense of, you know, they don't quite feel like themselves. They feel like they've given so much to their kids and their families. I want to help them realize that like, hey, this isn't selfish, you taking time for your writing. It's actually something that can show your kids that their dreams are possible, can show your, you know, family what is important to you. And I think, yeah, I want it to be something where I can help other women come back to themselves after that, you know, shift, major shift in identity.
I definitely want to get into the coaching that you do with Black and Latino women shortly. So put that in my back pocket for now. But there's a couple of things that you said in there that I kind of wanted to elaborate on. So like you mentioned, you work a full-time job, you're a mother of an infant, and you're writing. And it looks like on your Amazon page, from my extensive research, you've published around 6 books in the last 3 years. So could you mention, are there any like specific strategies or, I don't know, beliefs or anything that you use to help you balance these 3 roles and still find the time to write that many books in that short of a period of time?
Yeah, definitely. I think in terms of beliefs, there were definitely a few things that I had to kind of change my mindset around. And especially even before my son came into the picture, just in 2020, there are a lot of things I had to kind of get past to get to a point where I could actually stick with a writing project. I had to really embrace the identity of writer. I think for a while, you know, I was like, oh, I'm someone who writes. I like to write, you know, writing is a thing I do, but it felt weird to call myself a writer, even though I was like actively writing. It was like really hard to take on that identity. It took a while for me to be like, I am a writer. And now that I have fully claimed that identity, writing is something that is always going to be in my life. I'm always gonna, you know, return to it when things are, you know, other things are kind of going on. So that was a really big one of just embracing that identity and really owning it. The other like big belief was around, and this is one that still kind of comes up and that I see in a lot of other writers, was just around believing that like I had something worthy to say to the world, like I had something worthy of putting out. I think often, especially with readers, we read so many things that we can compare ourselves to, you know, these beautiful published novels, and it can feel, it can get really hard when we're like working on our first draft or the first draft is not good at all. It's hard to like make that like leap to like, oh, I should keep doing this when we're reading these amazing novels. And so I had to really embrace the fact that, you know, I deserve to tell whatever story I want to tell. And there are people out there who will want to read what I have to say. It has helped now, having published books and actually having readers tell me that they like what I have to say, that, you know, it makes it easier to like continue that cycle. But that was a big one that I had to like just really fully own when I started out, because it's so easy to just get in our heads and think like, oh, no one's going to want to read this. It's a waste of time. What's the point? But in sticking with it, that's how you take on that belief of, you know, this is worthy of doing, by actually continuing to do it and putting it out into the world. So those are really two big beliefs that I had to work on. In terms of strategies and tips, I think with like, you know, kind of juggling everything.
Oh, give me actions, any specific actions you might have taken.
So I think setting small goals for yourself. So I try for consistency in my writing. It's not every day at this point, but I try to aim for like 30 days or 30 minutes a day most days of the week. And if I can't get to 30 minutes a day, even 10 minutes of writing, you know, for like a really short period of time, I'm not going to get a ton of words written, but I'm making progress. Like after a year, you could, with 10 minutes a day, you could potentially have a novel written after a year. Like you can make, you know, a lot of progress with that. And by lowering my expectations for myself, it makes it easier to show up, and it makes it easier to like, you know, be able to check off that that box. So I think setting your expectations down low is really helpful. And also just knowing that like, the first draft is one part of the process. There's going to be a lot of editing, and what you're writing will improve and will get better. And you have the, I'm speaking to myself honestly right now, because I'm kind of in that first stage into editing phase. You have the ability to make your novel better. Like even if it feels kind of rough and ragged right now, like there are ways to improve it and you can figure it out. And having written the six novels, honestly, it's the wildest thing. Even with six, you know, in my back pocket, I still question my ability to do this. I'm still like, can I? And so I just have to like look at the books on my bookshelf and be like, nope, it's okay. You'll figure it out. So I think it's just constantly reminding yourself that like whatever, you know, sort of corner you write yourself into, you can, you know, figure out how to make this better. That I think can help with just continuing to move forward. And then I really appreciated having like writing communities around me, just other people to talk to. I'm involved in both like online communities, but then my town also has like an in-person writing community, and just kind of being in that space and talking with other writers and connecting with other people, I think just helps with keeping me motivated and like wanting to show up.
Specific? I'm curious, like, what writing communities are you a member of or involved in currently?
So I have one locally in my town, and then just a bunch of different like Facebook groups. There are a few writers. So Rachel Herron is an independent indie author and a trad author who, she has a podcast called Ink in Your Veins. Honestly, I will say Rachel Herron really inspired me in my writing journey as well. So I'll just shout her out as like, check out her podcast. But she has a Patreon and a Slack group and just a nice community of other writers who set goals together and just, you know, try to get the work done. So that actually, was a really great community for me to join and feel motivated during those times of COVID when I couldn't like, you know, interact with people in person.
Well, I'm Rachel Herron. All right, so I'm gonna actually look that up, and I'll get a link to that in the show notes as well for anyone who's listening to this. Okay, so I know when you were describing the series earlier that you had mentioned that it's based in Washington because you know you had grew up there and the Beagles there because you had a similar dog as well when you were growing up. So what advice would you give to authors who are like seeking new ideas and inspiration for their own stories?
Yeah, I think I'll definitely, why not pull things from your own life? I was talking to a writer about this recently, actually, because she was feeling like, oh, I don't know if anyone's going to want to read about something that's like inspired by my life. And I was like, just do it. Like, who knows? Like, just put it on the page. It'll be interesting to someone. So if there are things in your life that you're like, oh, this, I wonder if, you know, this could be interesting, or things that you really like about your life. The town I live in now is an island really close to a big city. So it's not like in the middle of nowhere, but I'm now working on a novel that is also set on an island because I like the idea of...
Wait, I'm sorry, do you mean like an actual like island as in like land surrounded by water?
Yes. It's very in close
San Francisco?
To... Yes, yeah. It's like on the bay between San Francisco and Oakland. If you look on a map, you'll see it.
Interesting.
And it's not like in the middle of nowhere kind of thing. Like it's very easy to get to San Francisco from this island. But there's something about like the idea of an island, like, you know, what happens if a murder occurs on an island? Like, can people get off of the, you know, I like that idea. So that has like inspired, it's not exactly like where I live now, but it, where I live has inspired that idea for me. So I think taking things in your life that are maybe kind of curious or interesting and thinking like, how can I make this like 10 times like crazier, wilder for a novel, I think is like one way to get some new ideas. And then honestly, I read a ton, and I think I just absorb story through the things that I read. And then when I'm writing, I think about like, okay, if I were reading a novel right now, what would be the interesting like twist that happens? So it's always hard to say like, oh, this is where I get my ideas from. Cause it's like, I don't know. I just live life and I read books and I take those things. It's like osmosis. Things just like come into me and then I like send them out into my novel writing. I think we just, for new writers especially, I think we just need to trust that our ideas are good and our ideas will be interesting to other people. We tend to, I think, shut ourselves down or be like, oh, that's a silly idea. Oh, that idea has already been done. How am I going to write something new? And I think we just need to trust that with our unique perspective on the world, we are going to create something that is unique to us that other people are going to resonate with. And just like the main goal when you're a new writer starting out is to finish your novel, because it's not until you finish it that you can actually take a look at it and assess like, is this working? Is this not? So I think just trust that like you have something interesting to share and there are going to be other people out there who will resonate with it.
Well, that's a really good point. Try to draw inspiration from your own background. Mm-hmm. All right. So I kind of wanted to shift gears a little bit. So in my extensive research, I do see that it looks like you are a book coach who specifically works with, it looks like, Black and brown working moms. So could you explain to us what a book coach is and what your coaching process looks like? And how do you specifically tell, well, it's kind of a three-part question. So what is book coaching? What does your book coaching process look like? And how do you tailor your coaching to specifically fit the needs of a Black, brown, and Latino working moms?
Yeah. So a book coach is basically like a partner for a writer as they are going through the journey of writing a novel. So an editor, you know, will come in usually after you have finished your manuscript and you're looking for feedback, and they'll give you some feedback and you'll go off and make those edits. A book coach, you know, can be there with you from the very beginning of your writing process. So you just have an idea and you want some guidance and feedback as you're writing. So for me personally, I will often work with writers who are just kind of thinking about this idea that they're really excited about and they need some extra support. And we will have kind of regular calls as they are writing the novel, and they'll get feedback from me as they're writing. So, I'll review like pages that they have written and just give them feedback on what's working, what could use some improvement, and just basically be that editor kind of along the way as they're going. A book coach will also be kind of compare it to like a cheerleader. Like as you're going, we will cheer you on and you know, help you feel good and confident about the work that you're doing. All writers know that it can be a very like lonely and solitary and, you know, kind of draining process, especially when you get like 30,000 words in or 20,000 words in. And so a book coach is there to help keep you accountable and motivated as you're going through this long process, and also helping you to like keep the ship steering in the right direction and the direction that you want it to. So that's kind of like high level how book coaches work. I'll come in, you know, kind of at the early stage, although honestly, I love working with writers at every kind of stage of the process. I love just like getting a new project and being able to like dive into it and figure out like, okay, what is working and where do you need some more guidance and some more assistance.
And how do you tell her that what you were just describing, that that essentially that accountability that you're giving them and that feedback that you're giving? How do you specifically tailor what you just described to us to Black and brown and working women of color, exactly?
Yeah, so I think the biggest, there are a couple of things that I kind of keep in mind when working with those particular types of writers. Definitely with the working moms and moms in general, time is a really big concern for them, like not having enough time, not feeling like they have enough time to do this work, feeling selfish because they're writing instead of being with their kids. And so these are a lot of sort of like mental things that we have to kind of work through. So I like to go into those conversations when I'm like first talking to someone, of just kind of understanding, you know, do they feel like they are in a time crunch? What are some strategies that we can work on to help them, you know, fit in their writing into like the pockets of time that they have during their day? How can they talk to their partner or any family members and say like, hey, this is, my writing is a priority, so I want to figure out how I can carve out time to focus on my writing and, you know, have some other help with childcare. So thinking about that, and then helping them to see how their writing isn't selfish. It's actually a way to show their kids that like their dreams are possible, dreams can come true, and to show their kids that it's important to prioritize yourself, that, you know, we can't always just give and give and give to other people. It's important to do things that we love to do as well. So I think it's a good way to like reflect that kind of thing to your kids. So I try to keep those things in mind when I'm working with moms especially. And then with people of color, women of color, I'm really passionate about writing stories that reflect like my lived experience and the kinds of people that I surround myself with. So all of my protagonists is a Black woman. She has like a Latino best friend. She works with another Black woman. There's, you know, all the characters from like all different backgrounds. And for me, it's not about like, the story is not about race, but it is about like these characters who just happen to be the kinds of like races that I'm surrounded by in my life. I also incorporate like LGBTQ characters into my stories, just because like those are my friends. So like I'm going to, you know, include them in my story. So when I'm working with writers who, you know, are Black and brown, or, you know, of a different ethnicity, kind of all of that, I like to think about like, you know, are there parts of your identity that you want to reflect into your writing? How do you want to make sure that you're referencing these things in a way that's not necessarily heavy-handed, unless you want the story to be about a certain kind of thing, but just having it be like a, you know, kind of automatic part of your process as you're going. Last summer, I worked with a writer who was from Nigeria. She was living in the US, but was from Nigeria. And she had written a romance novel that was set in Nigeria. And one of the things she said when we first started working together was that she wanted to incorporate a lot of her culture into her novel. She'd written a lot of it and was looking for some feedback on it. And that was something that was important to her. And so as I was reading it, I started noting all the places, both where I thought she did a good job of weaving in her culture, but also I found a lot of places where I felt like she could do more of that. Food was a really big thing in her novel. Like one of the big scenes was at a food festival. They were constantly cooking in the novel. And I was like, give us more of the food, like make it more, you know, describe the smells. How does it sound? How do we feel when we're surrounded by the food? How do the characters feel when they're eating it? is there any kind of like, you know, these recipes are like a family, you know, recipe that's been handed down? Like, how can we bring more of that into the novel? Because like, as I was reading it, I was like, I want more of this. I want to know more about like these Nigerian customs and what they're doing when it comes to just the food itself. And also, you know, because it was set in Nigeria, I was like, what does it look like? Like, let's get more specific on the main character was flying from the US to Nigeria. And it's like, okay, she steps off the plane. What is that experience for her returning to her home after having been away for a long time? Like, how does that feel? So I think, you know, if for writers where it's important for them to feel like they are reflecting their lived experience on the page, I really want to encourage them to like give even more than what they think is the right amount to give. Because I think often we can, as writers in general, we tend to like hold ourselves back a lot of times. And so for me, I consider it very important to just, yeah, encourage them to like put more on the page and really kind of amp up like the world that they want to see reflected in their novel.
Well, that was a very detailed, a lot more detailed than I expected. I especially feel that, you know, recording this, it's 2024, that, you know, we live in like a globalized society, you know, and there are so many different subcultures. I really think that that sort of representation that you're describing, you know, that's very important. So for a small taste of your coaching right now, so I was a little curious, like what techniques do you recommend for a writer to stay motivated and committed to finishing a novel, especially on like tough days?
Yeah. It's such a hard thing to do. I'm experiencing that right now myself with, you know, trying to write and juggling all of these different things. I think it's really important for writers to, especially if you're feeling stuck, but even if not, to really understand why you're writing, both like this particular novel, but then also just in general, why is this something you're choosing to do? I think it can be easy to hear a lot of other thoughts about why you should be writing, why you shouldn't be writing, and letting other voices kind of crowd our heads a little bit. But if we can really focus on like, why did you decide to do this in the first place? What's motivating you? And like remind yourself of that as often as you can, I think can help you like reaffirm to yourself, you know, okay, this is something that I am prioritizing that is important to me. So I'm going to, you know, do what I can to show up. And also showing up doesn't have to be, you know, 2000 words a day. It can be that 30 minutes of writing, like I said, it can be that 10 minutes of writing, as we talked about before. I think often when we think about writing a novel, we think it has to be like 8 hours in front of the computer every single day. That's impossible for most of us. I think even full-time writers who are doing this as a job don't spend that much time in front of the computer. So really thinking about, you know, how can I, if writing is a priority, how can I fit it into my life so that I'm able to give it attention, but still have other things, you know, that I have going on. So I think those are good strategies just to keep yourself motivated, and committed. And then I think it can help to, you know, I talked about the importance of community for me when I was, you know, really getting serious about my writing. I'm still involved in a lot of these writing communities. And I think that can really help you. It's kind of it's a delicate balance because you have to be careful about like too much comparison to other people who are maybe mm-hmm. writing more than you, faster than you, doing more things than you are doing. But also writers really understand other writers, and when we're going through challenges, it's really fantastic to be able to talk to people and like understand like, hey, what you're experiencing is completely normal. It's something that we all experience. Yeah. I think podcasts are really great for this. Just because it's, yeah, having someone like in your ears talking about, you know, the challenges of writing, but also the joys of writing, I think can be really motivating. And honestly, getting feedback on your work, I think can help a lot. Just knowing, mm-hmm. Honestly, if you can get like a little bit more like positive feedback, just like have someone read something and be like, what do you like about this? I think that can really like help to keep you motivated. There's always a time for getting more of that constructive, like what needs to be improved, you know, kind of phase of things. But I feel like we don't get enough like positive feedback about how we're doing with things. And so if you can, you know, if you find an online writing group, you know, maybe like exchanging some pages with someone and just being like, I just want to hear the nice things. I just want you to tell me what's working. I think that can help when you're like feeling stuck or like in the middle and sort of like, how do I get out of this? Yeah, just get some nice things. Hear some nice things about your writing.
Yeah, I think you made a lot of good points. It's a couple of things that I just want to touch on there. Like regarding like writing communities, I know that There's a lot of different like writing associations that are like divided by like subgenres. And if someone is looking for one, you could just simply go into like Google, Yahoo, your search engine of choice, and just type in whatever genre you write in and writing association or writing organization. And that way you could find different groups that you could potentially join. Sometimes there's a fee involved, but like you said, you could be in that community of people who kind of like understand what you're going through. And there's that synergy from being around, you know, writers who are very similar to yourself. And it's funny, I have a lot of authors on, and they almost all say the same thing that you just said about the importance of, you know, finding your tribe and finding people that, you know, like I said, going through the same thing as you, and they can give you that that feedback and that encouragement and a little bit of accountability. And also podcasts, I think that's, you know, it's very important, like this one. And by the way, if you're listening, if you're not subscribed, be sure to subscribe so you can get all our new episodes every Tuesday, and be sure to leave a 5-star rating, folks. So on your website right now, Josie, and on here it says, as an author accelerator certified coach, I specialize in helping working moms learn their story matters and build the kind of creative practice that they can sustain for the rest of their lives. So I'm curious, how do you, speaking of that last part, a creative routine that they can sustain for their entire lives, how do you recommend that new writers develop a writing routine that they can stick with for the rest of their lives?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is that identity shift that I talked about before of owning the identity of being a writer. I think for new writers, it's calling yourself a writer feels really scary. It's like, who am I to presume that I'm a writer?
I think they call it imposter syndrome.
Yes, that's exactly it. Yeah. But I think if you can get past that hurdle, even if that's just like every single day, like, you know, saying I'm a writer in the mirror. I don't know. There are, you know, different ways that you can try to take on that identity. Because I think once that happens, once you really see yourself as a writer, it doesn't matter what else is going on in your life, because you know that you will always go back to your writing, even if you have to take a break, even if you step away for a bit. As I mentioned before, when I was pregnant last year, it was just, there's just so much happening in pregnancy life. Like, just, I was exhausted all the time. It was a lot. And so I made a conscious decision to put my writing, you know, on hold for that time, because I couldn't do that plus the rest of my life. But once I had my son and started to feel like more like myself again, or just the last sort of, I had new challenges to deal with once he was here and we like weren't sleeping anymore. But, you know, once I kind of got out of that, that stage, with the pregnancy, it was really natural for me to just go back to like, oh yeah, I'm a writer. So of course, now that I'm feeling a little bit better, I'm going to, you know, go back to writing and figure out how can I keep writing within, you know, the new life phase that I'm in now. So I think if you can work on that identity shift, that will allow you to keep writing regardless of what is going on, because you, as a writer, you are someone who writes. Like, you'll just, you know, kind of keep showing up, even if you take breaks, even if you, you know, step away for a bit. So I think that's probably like the biggest thing that, at least for me, that I found that can really help me hold on to that identity and keep doing the work, even if, you know, lots of other things are going on.
Oh, that's interesting. So pretty much kind of what you're saying is that the change has to happen internally. And once you've shifted your identity to that of a writer, then you'll take actions that are consistent with your identity.
Accurate? I think so. I think that's how it works. Yeah.
Yeah. I think they call that in life coaching, I believe it's be, do, have, if I'm not mm-hmm. mistaken.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I have a lot of guests on the show. I've had a lot of other like writing and book coaches on. I actually had one on about 2 weeks, no, 3 weeks ago now. Her name was Charlotte Butterfield, a really smart, really nice lady. And she had mentioned that, at least in her coaching, a lot of her coaching is about essentially helping writers like get out of their own way. And so in your experience coaching, what are some of the common internal, I said, like hurdles or like negative or limiting beliefs that you see between your clients, besides the identity thing that we were just talking about? And what kind of advice do you offer your clients to overcome things like perfectionism, for example?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I hear from a lot of people that, you know, this fear that no one's going to like what they have written, no one's going to, you know, care about their story, or that their story has been done a bunch of times already, so what's the point in writing it? And what I tend to recommend in that case is that, you know, each of us has our own perspective, our own sort of sense of the world, and we are going to naturally write a different story than anyone else. For that example of, like, you know, if you gave a room of students a writing prompt, you would get, you know, 20 different, you know, stories out of that, because each of them has their own sort of take on the same thing.
Unless you can chat GPT.
But. Even then, I don't know. I feel like it's getting, like, smart enough to, you know, fiddle with it a little bit, depending on, like, how you ask the question. But yeah, like, each person has their own way of telling a story. And also, all of the different ways that we can say the same story, like, it's going to resonate with someone else out in the world. Like, even, I don't know, the weirdest, like, you know, genre bending kind of thing that you could write, like, someone out there, we see those books, you know, on the top of the charts all the time, like, someone out there is going to also resonate with it, especially if you write it with, you know, really full characters and really kind of, you know, evocative, like, language and stuff. So I feel really strongly with that particular fear that people have, is that, you know, there will be people out there who will enjoy what you have to read. You just have to, or what you write, you just have to finish it. You have to get to the end of it. And then with the perfectionism and that kind of challenge, I think that comes up a lot when people are comparing their first draft writing to a published novel, and they're not, like, the, you know, a book that's, like, on their bookshelf, and they're not seeing, you know, multiple, upwards of, like, 10 or 20 potentially drafts that novel had to go through before it ended up on your bookshelf. And you're comparing the words that you just typed out in, like, 20 minutes. That's, like, not fair to the first draft that you're working on. So I think helping writers to see that, like, you're not going to write something perfect the first time, and that's completely okay, because it's not meant to be perfect. It's meant to just be your sort of initial, like, you know, building up of this thing. And you have so much time to tweak it, make it better, work on additional drafts, and get it to a place where you would then feel good sending it out into the world. So yeah, I think people can, you know, kind of stop themselves, or maybe they'll write, like, 5 chapters and then go all the way back to the beginning and try to edit and just cycle through the 5 chapters. And to those people especially, I say, you got to just stop and keep going, like, keep going to the end. Don't just keep kind of cycling over what you've written, because you, like, I know for me personally, in my writing process, so much changes by the time I get to the end of the novel that I then have to go back and, you know, kind of line it all up and make it make more sense. And so if I were to stop halfway through and try to do all of this editing, I know that, you know, by the time I got to the end, it would turn into something else completely different again. So I'd rather just do what I can to get to the end and then go back and make all of those changes and improvements. Just because creativity is so hard to, like, nail down exactly what's going on, exactly how it works. And I think we just have to kind of let it be messy for as long as it needs to be, mm-hmm. and trust that, like, you can make it better, you know, as you're sort of going. But if you keep going over and over the same thing, there's no way to make it better, because you're just stuck in kind of the same place. So just keep moving forward.
Oh, that was a lot of really good points right there. So I hope you were taking notes on that, as long as you're not driving your car, because I don't want to be responsible for you getting into an automobile accident while you're listening to this podcast. So I was actually reading something online maybe like a week or two ago. Gallup does, like, a study of, like, happiness across the world. And for the first time in, I think, around, like, 30 or 40 years, the United States actually dropped out of the top 20th. And it looks like in the most recent version of the poll they did recently in 2024, the United States dropped from the 15th happiest down to the 23rd happiest. But the interesting thing is they actually break down like the poll results by, like, age group. And the reason why the United States had dropped down like 8 spots is because mostly, like, younger people, like generation Gen Z, which is pretty much 26 to about 13, are reporting that they're considerably less happy than, like, every other group, basically, like millennials, Gen Z, boomers, who are relatively happy. And also, digging deeper into the data, it also looks like Gen Z spends a lot of time on social media, more so than pretty much any other group who reports that they're relatively happy. And I think that there's probably like a correlation between, you know, the amount of time that they're spending on social media, which is basically like a highlight reel of people's lives, and they're comparing themselves to those other people and saying that, oh, I'm not on like a yacht, I don't know, riding a Tyrannosaurus Rex and drinking champagne, so therefore my life is terrible. And you're probably sitting there looking like, Ray, how does this tie into book coaching? But I'm getting there. So I was curious, as a coach, how do you help, or what would you tell a writer to do when they're feeling like a sense of like inferiority or insecurity when she's looking at other writers out there who have published books and, you know, they're getting reviews and they're quote unquote doing better than she is? What would you tell an author who's comparing herself like to other authors who might be a little bit further along in the journey than she is?
Yeah, no, it's such a good question, and really interesting about the Gallup results and just like how the U.S. has shifted. That's a good thing to keep in mind. And I agree that the internet, you know, it really is that highlight reel that, you know, we're only seeing part of the story, and it can be really overwhelming when we, you know, see all these amazing things happen, and then we know what's kind of going on in our lives. I think for that writer, even just like acknowledging that it is a highlight reel and that there are things going on behind the scenes that you are not able to see. I have to do that with myself, you know, sometimes where I'm like, I see all these amazing things happening and I just, you know, I don't want to like wish anything bad on anyone else, but I'm like, oh, there's probably something else going on that like they aren't putting on Instagram because no one wants to like hear about like the fight they just had with their spouse. So just knowing that like you're only getting some of it, I think can be helpful. And honestly, personally, I will sometimes just take breaks from social media, not necessarily for like a super long time, but just taking some time away from it when I can feel myself kind of getting sort of down about, you know, all that I'm seeing and how I'm comparing myself to it. I think sometimes I hear from people that like, well, you know, my work has to be online, or I'm online because of, you know, just kind of the like it's impossible to get offline fully, which is, you know, like a valid thing. But I think even like, you know, let's say you're working on your writing, putting your phone in another room for those 20 minutes while you write and just focus on your story and just focus on like what makes you excited about the book that you're writing, I think can help you at least maybe quiet a little bit of that comparison that's happening. And then also, yeah, going back to writing communities and finding people who are at kind of a similar point as you and being able to commiserate together about what's going on and how you're feeling about things. And then actually podcasts as well are a big one, because I think what you can, you'll get someone on a podcast who is likely further along than you, but they will tell you that they have the exact same fears and concerns and anxieties that you are going through as a newer writer. And so once you hear that, at least I have found, once I, you know, hear that, it makes me feel better about what I'm going through. Cause it's like, oh, okay, these feelings never really go away. They just get like a little bit easier to manage. It's easier to identify that this is happening. So I think it can help to hear from people, but hear that like, oh, other people are also kind of going through these challenges. It's not just me that's, you know, feeling insecure, inferior about my work.
That was a really good point. I also wanted to add that, you know, pretty much the whole goal of social media is pretty much just to keep people on it and, you know, scrolling so that these platforms can show us they can gather data and show us various advertisements. So I think that's also a really good thing. You also made a good point, I think, with trying to like take a break. Like I know I use like Apple devices. They have what's called focus time on it, where it can pretty much like limit my, I guess I'm like an access, I guess, to like various apps that I may otherwise just be procrastinating or like doom scrolling on. So I think that's also could be pretty useful as well. And if you're using Windows, I'm pretty sure there's like an equivalent, or you should just buy a Mac, because Macs are better than Windows anyway. That would be a great investment in your writing career. So Josie, I guess my last question to wrap up is, if anyone was listening and they wanted to, I guess maybe see if you were a good fit for some as a coach or something that they're working on, what would be the best way for someone to get in contact with you?
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram. My handle is Josie Smith Book Coach, and that's Josie spelled J-O-S-E-E. I also have a website, Josie Smith Book Coach, but I'm like pretty active on Instagram. And I love having calls with writers to kind of talk about like what are their challenges and how I think my coaching might be able to help them out. So we can definitely get on a call and kind of discuss, you know, what you're going through, what you're excited about with your writing, and you know, how I might be able to help you out. So you can shoot me a DM there, or on my website, there's also a link that you can go to. I'm really passionate about helping people share their stories and get more stories out into the world. And so if this has resonated and you want to work together to get your story out there, I'd love to help you finish your novel.
All right. Yeah, I'm actually on your website. Yeah, I do see you have a link here for a one-on-one book coaching. All right. So I'll also put links to your Instagram, your website, and to the to book a time for a coaching consultation with you in the show notes as well. So Josie, I wanted to thank you for taking the time to share your expertise and your wisdom with us and let us know about your feral cat. And apparently that there's an island near San Francisco that I never actually knew about.
Yeah, so look on a map. You'll find it.
I'll take a look. I'll take a look at that as soon as we're done today. That was very educational for me as well, and as it was for the audience. And so that is a wrap for this episode of the Pen to Profit podcast. And as usual, I am your host, Ray Evans, signing off. And as we say around these parts, the pen is mightier than the sword. Unless you're in a sword fight, then you might want to reconsider your options. Have a great day, folks.
Hit subscribe and never miss out on another episode. And hey, if your manuscript is thirsting for that polished edge before it hits the shelves, drop a line for a sample edit that'll make your word shine like a lighthouse at midnight. Use the link in the show notes to reach out to Ray at rayevansproofreader.com. Until next time, keep writing, keep dreaming, and keep aiming for the stars with your stories.